Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Booze and Bass Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is Madison. What are we going to be talking about today, Madison?
So, I don't know if you've seen Evil Genius on Netflix, but...
I've heard about it.
Has something to do with a robbery that occurred in August of 2003. Okay. A man by the name of Brian Douglas Wells. He robbed a PNC bank in Erie, Pennsylvania by wrapping a bomb around his neck and then just going for it.
That's crazy.
It really is crazy.
What an intro.
We don't usually do always like a true crime situation, but we do.
We haven't done one in a while.
And this is more also like a true crime slash a little bit of a conspiracy because his family believes that he was like a forced participation thing.
So like someone made him do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Whereas everyone else was like, nah, he was just friends with some weird people. But the main, let me set the scene. Cause there's a lot more people involved than I thought were involved.
Okay.
So Marjorie Deal Armstrong, these are just like a brief background. So you really get the scene of the people involved. She has a history of multiple mental illnesses, including bipolar disorder. She was institutionalized for multiple of them, including violence, stuff like that. She did shoot her boyfriend in 1984 she said it was for claims of self-defense. But that husband at the time and a couple other significant others of hers have died while they're with her.
Oh, it's definitely not a coincidence.
All under like suspicious circumstances and all like not a ton of evidence with it. It was always just like, oh, it was self-defense or like, you know.
That's not a coincidence.
Yeah. No. Especially like, I don't know if you've seen the Addams Family Values where she's like a black widow.
No.
And it's basically that she is just killing boyfriend after boyfriend. What do you think is like the call for like a coincidence that like it's weird if it's happened twice, but yeah. Like what is it like because I know somebody, not like personally, but they're on their like third or fourth wife, and the first like two or three have all died under like mysterious...
Hey, you might need a report.
I don't want to say sketchy circumstances, but it was like someone I used to work with.
That's like...
But it was just kind of like, oh, okay.
You know, I think three times is a coincidence. I think like after the second time, though, you kind of start getting suspicious. You're like, all right. What's really going on?
Do you think
you're really just bad luck?
Do you...
I'm not gonna lie.
That's not funny. But like, because also imagine that like two or three people, like let's say there are like two or three of them that they've all died and she just really does have bad luck. And now on top of that, people think she's a murderer.
Well, it's warranted. Like it's going to come with that. Your bad luck.
He said it's going to come to a head somewhere. Yeah. So that's what she's got going on.
Okay.
Then there's...
Tell us about contestant number two.
Right. Contestant number two is Kenneth Barnes. He is her, like, fishing buddy. All of these people are in their, like, 60s at this point. Like...
The first lady had a fishing buddy?
Yeah. She, and it was him, Kenneth Barnes. He also dealt crack, and that's an important part... Listen, that's an important part of it. He dealt crack, and he also, he died, like, all of these people died.
Oh, he died?
Yeah, like, she died from breast cancer.
Oh, she died?
In prison. Oh. Because she was...
It's that karma.
I was gonna say, plot twist, she does get put somewhere. And then he died of diabetes.
Damn,
when
he
was 60.
Stop watching
2019.
Now.
What?
People can stop watching now.
No, I know. I was gonna say,
we're not into like the main person.
I was gonna say all of them came to some tragic ends. next one intertwined in all of this is William Rothstein. He dated Marjorie, our girl, Deal Armstrong. Dated her in the 60s-70s. He was implicated in a 1977 murder. After he gave a handgun to a friend who used it to murder a romantic rival. So I think it was like they both liked the same girl. So he was an accomplice. He gave the gun, murdered him.
Let me tell you, I've been jealous before, but never that. I've never been that down bad before.
No, I know. Because like, what are you, what kind of friend are you? Like, were you, if your friend came to you and was like, I'm going to be so honest with you, like, I really want to date this girl, she's dating someone else, do you have, I know, balls, you don't, to go kill, I know, that dude. I was going to say, I know you don't have any guns, but like, do you have like a heavy Lego or something that could like kill him, you know? Like, would you kill someone for your friend? I'm assuming ideally it would be a no, depending on the situation. Or, like, the situation.
Like, if it's, like, a Hunger Games situation, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm talking about, like, this situation.
But if, like, my bro's down bad and wanted...
Yeah.
Yeah, nah.
It's, like, a down bad situation. You're gonna have to get something else. You give them the gun for them to do it? Or would you, like, do you think you would stop them?
Because that's going to get traced back to me.
Yeah. So you're more just purely selfish reasons why you're not going out.
Like, I want to just watch. Actually, I don't want to watch. But, like, I'm just there
to... Interesting.
I'm there to just, like, observe, if that makes sense. I might, like, contact the police, you know? You don't want anyone to get killed, but, like...
I wouldn't even know what to say to the police.
I know, I just incriminated myself.
No, I know. I was going to say,
if one of my friends ever commits a murder, I'm done.
Oh, yeah. If one of your friends commits a murder, the first place they're going is here.
Like, hey, in the podcast a couple years ago, you said...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you're going to be like, I...
No. I've said a lot of things.
No, exactly. I've done a lot of things. I've done and said a lot of things. Basically... Yeah, that's how he's kind of intertwined in it.
Okay.
He later attempted to destroy the weapon, so he ended up getting off with, he tried to destroy it. He...
Like a kiss and some Skittles, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, basically.
Cool.
He was a handyman and part-time teacher, and he was part of a group called the Fractured Intellectuals Group.
That sounds like a post-apocalyptic.
It was kind of like groups that they weren't so well-adjusted.
Oh, so they had,
It was like a... What?
What?
Nothing. It was
They're
like
kind of crazy.
Yeah. Like, for lack of a better word, like, they were just not, like... Kind of like the... Like a misfit group. But they...
Those are the villains, too. And like,
yeah. Like, they just... It seems like almost like a bunch of bad people found each other. Because it's almost like all of their stories have something to do with something like... They all have some sort of violent history. And they all don't seem like they have it all together. But he was admitted to a community hospital in 2004 after this incident, and he ended up dying of lymphoma that year. So it's almost like it's really weird that I feel like all of these people have died of like health-related issues.
We got a heart attack.
We had breast cancer, diabetes,
or diabetes,
lymphoma. He was... The reason he's important is he was kind of like, not the ringleader, but he's the one that made the collar. Like, he made the bomb collar, and like, he's the one that, I think he's the one that like figured out how it works, okay, essentially, and gave it, like, made it for Wells to put on. So he's kind of like a little bit of a mastermind, not a great one, but he's a mastermind in his own right.
Okay.
And then the last guy, Floyd Arthur, he goes by Jay Stockton Jr. He lived as a fugitive at Rothstein's house. He was granted immunity for his testimony against Steele Armstrong, but he was never called into court to test due to illness. And then he also did die of respiratory failure.
Oh,
sorry.
Man.
Of respiratory failure. Isn't that crazy? Because all of them died like in their 60s, 70s. Like, it's not like they died all of like old age, like 90s. Like, all of them died 60s, 70s.
That's literally like karma, though. Like,
I was gonna say,
that's like the definition of karma.
Do you think it's a karma situation or just shitty luck?
I think a little bit of both.
Definitely think it's a little bit of both.
Yeah, like, that's to just one after another, just boom, boom, boom.
You hate to see it. You really hate to see it. So that's kind of like, that's to set the scene for the group.
Okay.
A little bit of a misfit group. One of them was a crack dealer, so you can probably infer how some of them know each other.
Crack cocaine.
He said the spoon, if you will.
Booger sugar.
Hey. Not the booger sugar. They think... Now, Wells... They didn't... It's funny... Not funny, but, like, oddly enough, they didn't have a ton of information about him, I feel like, on any... Like, it was mostly the backgrounds of, like, the masterminds behind,
like... Was he kind of, like, a nobody?
Yeah, like, okay. He worked at the pizza shop that he was delivering from. He worked there for 10 years. Like, he... his family kind of described him as kind of...
Weird?
Kind of quirky, kind of quiet kind of situation.
That's a nice way to put it.
He was set up by Jessica, I believe it's Hoopsick. Yeah, Jessica Hoopsick. She was a prostitute, and she set him up because she knew Kenneth Barnes, because he dealt her crack. And she kind of, like, exchanged Wells as, like, a...
Was he demonetized for saying crack?
I don't know.
It's not my crazy name.
No, I know. Wells, they kind of, like... He was kind of like a... I don't want to say a test dummy. It's not the right word. Like, he was kind of like a...
Oh, they're like, oh, let's make sure this works before we, like...
Kind of. Like, he was just... It was more so of, like, she wanted drugs and money. So, in exchange, she gave this, like, pushover of a guy that would go rob this bank for them. Okay. A scapegoat.
Scapegoat.
That's the better, I guess, a better thing. It's basically, she was just like, hey, I could probably convince this guy that's been paying me to sleep with him to put this mom on his neck.
Crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
Crazy.
Because, like, prostitution is, like, legal in some places.
Yeah.
So, like, you got set... It's not like he was doing something like he was dealing the crack or anything. No, you know what I mean? Bamboozled. Like, he kind of got fucked. I'm going to be honest.
Yeah.
So...
Literally.
Anyway, yeah, I was going to say that. I was like, well, anyway. So that's what the, I guess, the argument conspiracy thing comes from. Is like his... And I guess it's not even a conspiracy. It's more of an argument. Like, because...
Maybe this is true crime.
Let me. Well, I was gonna say. This let me set true. The scene of what happened, and then we'll talk a little bit about
let's
the
get to the meat
that.
And potatoes.
The meat and potatoes. So, like I said, worked 10 years at this pizza delivery place. It was on August 28th, 2003, 1:30 in the afternoon. The pizza place gets called for a delivery order that's not out of the ordinary. I think he was the only delivery driver, so it's not like.
So he just got. Was it per?
Like, he knew, like, the pizza, because he knew he was getting that call, because the pizza place received the call from a random payphone. So, like, the call itself was set up because he was the only delivery driver, so he would have to take the pizza.
So the call wouldn't have happened if it was some other dude.
Yes.
Okay.
So he definitely knew, I think, it was happening, but, like, I...
He says, go,
like,
time, baby.
Right. Correct. So he delivered the two peaches to 8631 Peach Street. And the address was the location of a transmitting tower at the end of the road. According to the law enforcement, upon arriving at the television tower, he found out the plot had changed and learned the bomb was real, because originally, I guess, he thought the bomb was fake.
Oh, his friend set him
up. Yeah, like, this is, like, a setup. So it's, like, he did technically, like, know about it, but they told him, I think, that the bomb was fake and that it was just kind of, like, a test run, almost.
I mean, you would. You don't want him to get freaked out.
Correct.
You know, kind of thing. Yeah,
so, no. Wells family...
I say that, like,
I
was part of it.
His family disputed a couple, like, accounts of that and basically was saying that instead he was held at gunpoint, and forced to participate versus, like, him kind of being in on it, but more so in on it that he thought it was fake. That he knew there was a bomb, but he thought it was fake. His family is saying that he knew nothing and he was forced at gunpoint.
That's what I heard. Like, that's the story that
I heard. That he showed up and they forced him, were like, put this bomb on. So it says that when the details of all of that were never really established among the group of four of them. But it suggests that there was a struggle between, like, Neil Armstrong, Barnes, like, basically all of the main players I mentioned earlier were there. And that there was a little bit of a struggle. It seems that Stockton claimed to be the one to put the bomb around his neck. When he discovered that the bomb was real, Barnes said a pistol was fired in order to force Wells' compliance, and witnesses did confirm hearing a gunshot. So he did agree to it, but I don't think he agreed without coercion. Okay. Kind of thing.
So this is, like, a huge, like, he's making it seem like he didn't know, like, he got forced into this.
Yeah, well, he...
That's, like, an elaborate, pretty, like...
It's very elaborate, because also, he was instructed, he was given a homemade shotgun, and it just looked weird. It was, like, shaped like a cone. And he said that they basically told him to tell people that three armed black men were the ones holding him at gunpoint and causing him and holding him as a hostage.
Man.
So some evidence surrounding that of what they found. They found like a 9-page detailed bomb hostage, like information packet in his car, detailing what they were going to do, including like the time sensitive information of what tasks they were doing and mm-hmm. what they were supposed to carry out from the bank. Like basically found all of his everything.
Yeah.
Along with "Act Now, Think Later, or You Will Die" was written on the bottom of the instructions given to him. Which also kind of plays into the evidence that he was maybe originally not coerced into hanging out with the people, but coerced into, like, the bomb actually being real.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Kinda.
So then the actual robbery itself, basically he was instructed to enter PNC Bank, slip a note to the teller and say, "Hey, give me $250,000 and threaten them with the shotgun." Yeah, right. Threaten them with the... So let's put a pin in that though for a second. I feel like if I were to do something like robbing a bank, I feel like I would want like more compensation than $250,000.
I don't know.
Because
how
then you're also splitting that with somebody that you're stealing.
How much does a bank typically have
on hand?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Because I feel like...
This is also 2003, so...
I feel like they would have more cash. Because I feel like maybe now they wouldn't have as much cash, because a lot of things are digital. But maybe at the time, I feel like there's a good case.
Yeah.
For their possibly...
And don't get me wrong, $250,000 is a lot of money. But when you're robbing a bank...
Right. It's not... I guess... If you think about it also in terms of like there's somebody's account there that probably has that much money in it.
Yeah.
Just one account, you know?
People are gonna call me and be like, "Do you guys know how banks work?"
I'd be like, Marissa's gonna listen to this while she's at her bank job and be like, "Hey, dumbass, I've explained this to you multiple times. I don't know how banks work.
My parents worked at a bank."
I was just saying, well, well, maybe they can give us a lesson because we're not clearly doing well with it. But yeah, he slid the note to the teller, told them the bomb is going to explode in 15 minutes unless you do, like, the full amount has to be handed over within that time. The teller was unable to access the vault that quickly and only gave him a little over $8,700.
Oh, come on now.
And then he left. So at 2:38, though, a witness called 911 and basically told them, like, "Hey, there's someone leaving the bank, and it looks like he's a bomb strapped to him." And after he, like, a lot of the people were saying that, like, again, it's not funny, but it's just that he was...
As he started...
No, because he was so, like, a lot of were saying that he quite literally was so confident about this. Like, I think they almost... The bomb, I think what my assumption is that they told this man, "Hey, we're going to get a lot of money if they think there's a bomb on your neck. So put this fake bomb on your neck and go rob this bank."
So he should have acted a little bit more scared.
So I almost feel like he was just, I just feel like he was just like, okay, and then didn't know it was a real bomb because he, like... He got a lollipop, apparently, when he was waiting in line. Like, he was sucking on the lollipop, waiting to go extort them for money. Like, some witnesses literally likened him to skipping out, like Charlie Chaplin, like in an old-timey movie. Like, he genuinely thought that he
was the bee's knees.
Hook, line, and sinker. Like, he's like, "Slay. I got them. I got their asses." He didn't.
He didn't.
Again... That and this again is all under the guise of like it being a scavenger hunt, quote unquote.
Yeah.
So again,
it's like a big
he thinks
escape
he's
room.
Playing a big escape room.
Yeah,
he's the main character at this point. So this man, 15 minutes later, he leaves the bank. He completed the first task. He was going to do the second task when the police saw him and stopped him, and they arrested him because they were like, "Hey, you just robbed a bank. You can't do that, bud." Left him on a They left him on the ground of a parking lot, and Wells repeated the story. Like, three black guys, like, came and told me I had to do this, whatever. They provided him the shotgun, told him they would kill him unless he did it. So the police officers didn't attempt to disarm the device or anything. they just tried clearing as many people out of the the area, because they figured out that Wells had no idea how the bomb worked, so he could not denotate it. Detonate. There we go. I can never say it. I tried saying it twice out loud last night, like, and I couldn't.
Detonate.
But then I feel like it's something like I'm saying dentures. I know. But the bomb, he couldn't figure it out. The bomb squad was first called at 3:04. And at 3:18, 3 minutes before the bomb squad arrived, it exploded and blasted a fist-sized hole in Wells' chest, killing him in seconds. So all of these people are dead. I mean, his was the only one, though. Like, his obviously was bomb-related.
Yeah. Sweet.
He died on scene.
Blow it in his chest.
Because it was a collar that was on. So I think it was the way it was. I don't think it was, like, one that...
I don't think it was one that
blasted off. I think it was one that just, like, hung right here, and then it just exploded there.
Oh, okay.
So then it exploded, like, right here.
Okay.
It's my assumption of what I picture, you know.
Sure.
So, obviously, he did not make it past that. But the death also involved another conspiracy, like, surrounding it, linked to it, that's like half, like, kind of linked to it. On August 31st of 2003 of that year, his co-worker at the pizza store, the only other delivery driver there, so Robert Thomas Panetti, was found dead in his home after suffering a drug overdose, but it wasn't confirmed if it was accidental. So they just think it's just, like, and that, I don't think anything ever came of it, but it was just another, like,
kind of death related
weird thing that just was, like, how big, I don't want to say how big is this group, because it's not a group, but it's, like, a organized something is going on with these,
it's a cult, this group of friends.
Clan. Because I was going to say, we've hung out with our friends a couple times, at least, never killed anyone thus far.
Yep.
But anyway, on September 20th, later that year, 2003, Rothstein, who lived near the television tower, he called them to tell them about a body in his garage named James Roden. After he called the police, Rothstein, that was involved with that whole thing, he wrote a suicide note saying that he didn't have anything to do with Wells. And I think he was trying to stage that he tried killing himself, but they didn't believe that he actually did. But he did claim that Deal Armstrong at the time did murder her then boyfriend, again another person that showed up dead in her house, and she has no idea how
she's meeting these guys. Is it like Tinder or something like that?
I think she's just meeting them, and from what I read, it seems like it's all, like, sketchy places. Like, these are, like, you have to remember, these are, like, crack dealers. Like, they're meeting each other at sketchy bars. Like, I don't think they're really questioning it. It's not like someone like you going to this girl's house and someone murdering you. Like,
That's true.
I don't think anyone's, like, it sounds sad. I don't think anyone's necessarily looking for these people. But it was, he claimed that she murdered him, the guy that was in her freezer, over some money, which is how they got brought into the station and then linked to the robbery and the investigation.
That's crazy. She kept him in his freezer or her freezer?
Yeah. That's and crazy. It was believed that I don't think she actually got, like, she pleaded guilty, but mentally ill to the third degree and abuse of a corpse for killing him, and then was sentenced between 7 and 27 years in prison. And they said that he was linked to it because he was planning on going to the authorities to turn them all in. And she said, no, sweetie, you're not. And she killed him.
That's crazy. Cause, like, I always see, like, I don't know if you ever get on TikTok, but it's like the little, cop cams.
Yeah.
Where it's like, they're going to, like, a murderer's house. And it's, there's, like, this one kid that, like, murdered this, like, random homeless dude. And, like, just had, like, parts of his body in his house. Like, I was like, that's just, like, wild to me. Like, you know, you like watch like serial killer documentaries and they're like, oh yeah, we found a head and arms right. in like the freezer.
Right.
It's like, why?
Well, especially like, since it's always like, it's always people like that, but it's like, this is like their fifth offense. And I'm like, you're finding people in their freezer. This is probably not the first person in their freezer, but for whatever reason, this is the first person that you're looking into. Like a Texas Chainsaw, like a Leatherface situation. Yeah. That like, or Ed Gein, it was based off of the serial killer, but like nobody really looked too far into it until it was his mom, and they were like, hey, like you should have noticed the other, yeah, I was gonna say maybe you should have noticed the other dead bodies that were missing, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like it was definitely a situation like that that she probably should have gotten acquitted a while ago, or like taken care of a while ago, but. In 2005, so 2 years after this happened, she let them know, like the police know, that she had some information about the Wells case, and that she would be willing to tell them everything if she was transferred to Muncie Correctional Institution.
Yeah, she's probably getting beat up in the other prison.
No, to a minimum.
She's like, I can't stay here, man.
Correct. Basically, that was the reason why. Is
oh, really?
She,
dead ass?
Is because she wanted to go to a minimum security.
Oh, like, she was getting beat
her ass
up.
Yeah, it's a Cambridge Springs. She wanted to go to a minimum security prison instead because she felt like she was being treated unfairly at the other one. And then in 2005, Barnes, who... the crack dealer. He was in jail for drug charges turned in by his brother-in-law.
Oh,
and on September 3rd, 2008, so a full 5 years after the whole conspiracy, he pleaded guilty to conspiring to rob a bank and aiding and abetting. He was sentenced to 45 years in prison by a federal judge. And then he was later reduced to 22.5 years after he conspired to get Deal Armstrong put away.
What's crazy is like these people would be close to getting out if they're still alive.
Is it? It's that's why this case is so weird to me. Is that like this would be something that would probably be on the news, like from because this was a pretty big
case, 2003.
Like it was a very big case. So like it's like this would be something that would definitely on the news now. Be like, you know, Kenneth Barnes out of prison, like. Breaks the silence on what happened. You know what I mean? That it's very like spooky, I feel like, to think
about. Yeah, I don't know. That's like weird to think about. Like, oh, this guy that committed this crime 22 years ago is like being released now. It's like, oh.
Okay.
All right.
So a little bit after that in 2007. The U.S. attorney, Mary Beth Buchanan, announced Deal Armstrong and Barnes both being charged with the crime, and Deal Armstrong basically being the mastermind behind everything and being like, hey, she's murdered everybody that she's ever been in contact with.
It's just a coincidence.
No, right.
It's just a coincidence.
Just a silly coincidence. Rothstein and Wells obviously were named as co-conspirators, but, I mean, at this point, since they are...
deceased.
Not with us anymore, then yeah, it doesn't really matter. Buchanan stated Wells had been involved from the beginning, like as far as knowing the plan, but that he wasn't aware he was going to be fitted, like I said earlier, with a real bomb.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, if I were to go, if they were to put a bomb to my neck, and they were to do, like, say, hey, go rob this bank, I'd be like, and they told me it's not real. I'm going to go in there confident as hell, you know?
Yeah.
But, like...
especially since, like, if I'm...
I'm not going to die on this. I'm about to get paid.
Right. Because you know? We will... like, we'll get to that part more about Jessica Hoopstick or whatever. Yeah. But, like, especially if this guy didn't have any other friends or family, and the only thing, like, he was... I guess the only human interaction he had were, like, these... like, this girl that he, like, sleeps with on occasion or whatever, then, yeah, he's probably going to do whatever.
It's crazy. You go from, like, pizza delivery driver to...
a heist, basically.
Yeah.
Which, again, crazy. But, yeah, she basically was... most of her charges were dropped in a lot of her cases due to mental health. That she wasn't...
Sane. Yeah.
To be in a court case or, like, to be able to stand for the hearing. They basically sent her to a facility to try to get her competent so that she could be at the hearing. And they deemed her competent in October of 2010, where she took the stand to testify on her own behalf versus, like, through psychologists and through other things, which I think this was one of the first times that she actually testified for herself.
And then she said, peace out. I'm gonna die.
Right. And then she tried, she asked for a change of venue because she was...
Where'd she want it? What does she want it? The local public?
Like, I know. She said it was because there was too much media coverage of it, which was preventing her from receiving due justice.
Could you imagine she gave her testimony in like a Chili's or something like that?
Right, exactly. And the judge denied that because she was saying basically since it was done in Erie that it was too much like a media circus and it was people just wanted... Basically, nobody wants to see her winning. And that's why she wanted to change the venue. The judge said... Sweaty, that's not my problem. Like, you, the reason you're here is because of you. So on November 1st, 2010, she was convicted of an armed robbery, conspiracy to commit armed bank robbery, and of using a destructive device in a crime. And then on February 28th, 2011, she would be sentenced to life in prison to be served consecutively with the prison term imposed in 2005 for killing Roden. And then in 2013, the U.S. Supreme Court denied her petition to hear her case again.
And then when she died?
Do we know? Yeah, well, yeah, she died because in December 2015 she tried appealing it again and they said no.
Oh, and they said no and she said, all right, peace, I'm out then.
Yeah, so she died in April 4th, 2017.
Oh, yeah.
So she died literally like
2 years later.
Like a year and a half later, she passed.
I'm done with this.
Right. And then in 2018, Jessica Hoopstick, who was the prostitute. Okay. She admitted to her involvement in the plot and she wrote an interview with Time and she wrote, Hoopstick says a conspirator approached her to find a gopher who could be scared into robbing a bank. In the 2018 documentary Evil Genius, she identifies the conspirator as Barnes and recommended Wells to him, whom she described as a pushover and admitted to setting him up in exchange for money and drugs.
Man, if my friends describe me as that,
that's they crazy. All get in it, man. Like, this man's a pushover, so we strapped a bomb to his neck.
That's why. Like, what a crazy story.
It is a crazy story because there's really no resolution. It's quite literally like all of these people just needed a scapegoat. And they found one, and he was confident as hell with it.
But at the time, they thought like Wells was like this innocent guy.
Yeah, so they thought, and that's what his family was saying, is that, you know, they were like convinced that they like put a gun to his head. And I think they're also holding on to the fact that like he didn't actually like want to have a real bomb on him. Like,
I don't think anyone.
No, I know. But like I'm saying, I think that his family's holding on to like the fact that they did admit like, oh, he didn't know it was a real bomb. So I feel like the people that actually did it. So I feel like they're holding on to that, but like they're also missing the part where he agreed to robbing a bank, regardless with a bomb or not. He still agreed to rob a bank.
He sat there and said, "Yeah, that's a pretty good decision."
Right. So it's like I get it, but also like to what extent? You know.
It's like I know this is bad, but you know.
But let's make it worse. Yeah. So yeah, that is our topic for today about the. That robbery. I haven't actually seen the first, like, the full thing on Netflix, so now I might.
Watch it, yeah.
Yeah, because that's cool. But
that was crazy. Like, I remember watching a little bit of it, and then, like, hearing that, it's just like, that was probably our best true crime. I like that one.
I like that one, too. It was interesting. Yeah. It was definitely, because there was all of the moving parts almost, it's like, have everything and nothing to do with each other at the same time. But with that being said, thank you guys so much for listening today. Make sure to subscribe to our channel and anywhere you guys listen to podcasts and our YouTube channel that we are now trying to post more on. And with that being said, we will see you guys next time. Bye.